We're back to Neil Haley Show and also the Media Giant Effect. And oh my goodness, I'm excited to welcome the program author of Bottled Lightning, L.M. Weeks. L.M., thanks for stopping by, man. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me, Neil. It's great to be on.
Absolutely. We were talking about your book on the last segment. We're going to just jump into more and more of your background that kind of fits into why you've written this book. What is your background and what expertise do you bring to the table as a writer?
It's a legal thriller. It's an international high-tech legal thriller is the way I describe it. And I'm a lawyer. I've been practicing for almost 35 years. I practiced in New York for about 16 years, and I've practiced in Japan for about 16 years as well. I've represented a lot of technology clients over the years. And I've also been to Russia, where part of the book takes place. I was born in Alaska, where part of the book takes place as well. So all of that experience sort of converged and helped me to write Bottled Lightning.
Yeah, and absolutely. When you think about specifically enough the experience working in the legal, so what type of law did you practice?
I'm still practicing, actually. I do a lot of cross-border mergers and acquisitions. And a lot of it involves technology. And when you have technology involved, typically there are intellectual property issues like patent issues. But we also have dealt with a lot of theft of trade secrets or misappropriation of trade secret matters, which are almost like spy stories. They could be very clandestine, people stealing technology right out of research labs. For example, and
How do they do that? How do they do that, by the way?
well, it depends on the technology, but one technology that a client had developed was a way of generating a food additive using a particular type of bacteria that they had engineered and genetically engineered. And they have laboratories all over Asia, actually. And one of their competitors bribed one of their employees to bring out a sample of the bacteria, and they're checked going in and out, but this employee hid it inside their shirt. It only, it's bacteria, so it only has to be. It doesn't have to be very big, the sample, and they smuggled it out of the laboratory and gave it to the misappropriating competitor.
So the bacteria, why would that be considered technology? I'm just learning these things firsthand because it, you
So
know.
the bacteria was a very standard bacteria. In other words, it's in it appears naturally in or occurs naturally in nature. But they engineered it in such a way that when they fed sugar into it, it would produce this food additive that's actually for farm animals that they could then sell on the market to cattle ranches, for example. And they spent years and millions of dollars re-engineering essentially this bacteria so that it would
Oh
produce
my God.
not only the food additive they wanted it to produce, but it would do it essentially until it died. So all animals have we have something built in genetically that stops us from eating when we're full. And they engineered that out. So it would just keep producing and producing and producing, which allowed them to produce this particular product much faster than any competitor.
Oh my.
And they had patented it, and it was held as part of it was held as a trade secret, and nobody else had it. They could produce the same amount of product in half the time, which lowered their cost, and made them much more competitive. And that's why their competitors wanted access to this technology.
See, that's so cool because this is learning these things because you don't understand these things. So specifically enough, you can't protect that technology in a patent, right? So that's why if someone steals it, they can just copy it, right? So
Yeah, that's exactly
basically,
right.
that's the big thing. Everyone says, okay, let's say you have this great idea for a weight loss pill or certain things like that. It's very hard to patent something like that. So somebody is able to copy the genetics or something, how it's transformed, you're screwed. And
Yeah,
that
that's right. Once it's out there, once it's disclosed, a trade secret is only a trade secret as long as the information is confidential. Once it's out there in the public, it's gone, and you lose the protection of the trade secret. And that's what's nice about patents. At least if you have a patent, there's a social contract when you get a patent. And the social contract is that in exchange for you, Neil, disclosing how you make a particular formula to the public, you get 20 years of protection. So you can stop other people from manufacturing that particular product. And then after 20 years, it goes into the public domain.
How difficult is that if a company has lots of money and can keep taking you back to court with a patent?
Oh, there are all sorts of challenges. I mean, just ask the Wright brothers. They were basically litigated into oblivion over their patents. Now, this was before patents had the same strength that they have now. And by the way, I'm not a patent attorney, so it's not my
intellectual. So what is it again? You're an
attorney. Intellectual property. And there are different kinds of intellectual property. There's patents, for example, there are trade secrets, there are copyrights, but trade secrets only work sort of like the classic example is the Coca-Cola recipe. They only work as long as it's confidential.
So somebody who steals it, that's where you'll get involved in saying that you stole this from the lab.
That's right. That's right. And that happens a lot. And it's
where is your more business, trade secrets or intellectual property?
Well, trade secrets are part of intellectual property, but it's a really good question. It's a very interesting issue, but the litigation seems to be more on the patent side because patents are disclosed.
Right.
So disclosed to the public and innovators will in fact examine patents to see if there's a way that they can work around that patent. In other words, come up with a similar invention that has the same properties without infringing that patent. But that results in more innovation if they can do it, which is a good thing. And that's why patents are one reason that patents are a good thing.
So you're not involved in patents, more straight trade secrets. I'm trying to understand that. And that's a big thing. When you're talking about your other thing, which is involving intellectual property, because you said patents and trade secrets under that, you're focusing more on trade secrets. And you're also focusing on specifically enough other types of intellectual property. What it like, you're talking basically brand name, logo, things like
that? Yeah, that's exactly right. And what I do, since I'm an M&A attorney or a mergers and acquisitions attorney, I will work on deals where, let's say a Japanese company is buying a U.S. company or European company or vice versa. We've done a lot of deals in Japan where U.S. or European companies have come in and purchased assets or companies in Japan. And those targets will have different assets, right? They'll have plants, they'll have equipment, and then they'll have intellectual property. And typically, if they have if it's a biotech company or a big pharma company, they'll have all these in addition to the patents and trade secrets and the trademarks, as you mentioned, that they'll have all these license agreements. And you have to wade through the license agreements to make sure you're not breaching any of those by doing the acquisition. So it ends up being a lot of work, which is good for us.
So you're seeing a lot of mergers?
Yes. Yeah.
You work on your own, you work for a firm?
I work for a firm, Orrick, Herrington & Sutcliffe. It's a global firm.
But you enjoy the whole international thing, for sure.
Yes. I was in our Tokyo office. Well, see, it's a long story, but I have a 44-year history with Japan. I went there as an exchange student in high school in the late 70s. And then I went back during college in the early 80s. And then I practiced there as a junior attorney in the early 90s. And then after becoming a partner and practicing in New York, I relocated to our Tokyo office in 2004. And I was in our Tokyo office just until recently. So yes, it was all cross-border work, which is fascinating because you're dealing with different countries, different cultures, different laws, different languages, different ways of doing business. And I just found all of that fascinating. And particularly in the context of an acquisition, you're dealing with so many different issues. And even if you're buying just one company, typically they have a bunch of subsidiaries. And so you have to look at all those subsidiaries. And they may be in India, they may be in Singapore, they may be in Germany. And you have to look at all of that. And I just find that really fascinating. It's kind of like being a conductor.
Yeah.
to get all
I find this fascinating in just Japan alone. What do you think by writing the book? You wrote the book because you enjoy writing, but do you see long-term writing more books, or do you see other things of trying to build your brand out in certain ways? What are your thoughts?
Oh, it's a good question. I'm actually working on a second book right now, which is completely unrelated to Bottled Lightning. The reaction to Bottled Lightning has been very gratifying. I just wrote it because I felt compelled to tell this story. And I didn't write it with the idea of writing a series or a sequel, although that seems to be the path to riches for writers. But it ended in such a way, I didn't intend it this way, but it ended in such a way that it's set up very well for a sequel. And I've had lots of readers write me and say, you better be working on a sequel. You know, I want to know what happens to the characters. It has a complete ending, but it is set up very well for a sequel. We'll see. I'm writing what I find compelling to write about. So from a business plan perspective, it's not the right way to do it. I should be probably focusing on a series. But my
you're writing book, another book. You have another book in the works.
It's completely different. Yeah.
But does it involve Japan at all? And like,
no, it doesn't. Actually, it involves fly fishing in the Florida Keys.
I saw some of your stuff on TikTok.
Thank you for looking.
Yeah, I was taking a look at that. Oh, man, that's a niche, man. You can make some huge money when you're talking about fly fishing. It's such a niche sport and area. I heard of someone that did a fly fishing podcast, was able to get this guy explained. He said he had no listeners and they started the podcast, already had sponsors, which is crazy for certain, you know, niche audiences. Like, again, talking about Japan, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of people that are that have reached out to you. They're expats from Japan saying loving this, right? Loving what you're
doing. Yeah, there's a lot of Japan otakus, definitely, people from the anime world. So it's been a good niche for me because, like, as you say, you know, it's kind of a clear niche in addition to the legal thriller. And fly fishing is too, it's a built-in niche. And even though, fly fishing for tarpon is a sort of a niche within a niche, it definitely has a built-in audience. And I actually started my social media, presence, as it were, to market Bottled Lightning. But the only material I had before I published the book
was fly fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Fishing videos and photos. So I started with that. And I think that's going to work out well for the upcoming book.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Where's the best place you can find information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about you? It was great to have a part two. I think we're going to definitely, you're the good go-to guy when we're going to talk intellectual property, especially if certain topics come up and things like that. Because, man, we're talking that stuff. I need conversations, especially with the media giant where he's going. You got to have someone like LM in your corner for sure with different things.
Well, reach out to me at any time, Neil, please. You can find me, readers can find me at lmweeks.com. And also I'm on Linktree, you know, / LM Weeks, and I'm on most social media. So yeah, please reach out. Of course, you can find the book on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. It's there's a paperback, there's a hardcover, there's an audio version, there's an ebook. And feel free to contact me. I love hearing from readers.
All right, thanks, LM.
Thank you, Neil.
You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.